Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Untangled Resolution's presentation of The Breakup Whisperer. I am your host, Batabile Mtombeni, The Breakup Whisperer, and I'm coming to you live from the southern tier of New York State in the United States of America. Today, I welcome two very special guests to the show, Vera Mtombeni and Jonathan Mtombeni. She is a retired nurse practitioner, he is a retired pediatrician, and they just happen to be my mom and dad. Dad is also an ordained minister, and together, he and my mom have counseled quite a number of couples about their relationships. Today is Father's Day, and it also happens to be my mom's birthday. I feel very fortunate that I can honor them both by inviting them onto the show to share their wisdom about breakups and to talk about a very special project that they have founded and manage in South Africa, where they go each year to escape the Southern California winter. Our music is brought to us by the wonderful people at Purple Planet Music. That's www.purple-planet.com. Sit back and listen while everyone gathers. We'll be with you in just a moment. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show today. I'm really excited and a little nervous for today's show because my guests are my parents, and we are talking about breakups, which can be a little nerve-wracking. But they're really cool, and I'm very curious to see what they have to say. Before we start, I'd like to welcome Serbia and Vietnam to the show. You join Canada, Argentina, Algeria, Germany, and South Korea, as well as the United States. And of course, I am very excited to welcome you. I also want to say happy birthday to my mom, who is a woman who defies her age. She's an inspiration to me and an inspiration to many people. And I'd also like to say happy Father's Day to my dad, who also defies his age. He is still able to walk circles around me. We'd like to take walks sometimes, and I find myself struggling to keep up with him, which is really embarrassing, kind of. But, you know, I'm very happy to say that they are both in very good health, and I'm happy to have them on the show today. I'm turning on your mics, Mom and Dad. You are live. Hi.
Hi, Tabby.
Hi, Tabby.
How are you?
We're just fine. Thank you.
We're great.
And we hope you're fine, too.
I'm doing very well, and I want to thank you both for making it so convenient to celebrate both of you on the same day.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Good. I also want to explain to some of you who might be wondering, that name they called me, nobody else is allowed to call me that, okay? That's my home name. Nobody calls me that. All right. I have brought you on the show today for a couple of reasons. One is, well, I thought, you know, because you have your background, you've done counseling, you know, premarital counseling and a bit of couples counseling, you would be great folks to have on this show, which is all about fostering a healthy breakup culture. In other words, encouraging folks to be able to graciously end relationships when it becomes necessary to do so. And then it's a great opportunity to talk about this project that you have in South Africa. You call it Project Early Start, or Mampimpana is where the area is that the kids are with whom you work, and the people are. This is the area where you started. So we're going to have two parts to the show, and we're going to talk about both of those. But I'm going to start off by asking you the existential question. Are relationships supposed to last forever?
Yes.
And it also depends on the type of relationship. Is it a business relationship? Is it a love relationship? Is it a marriage? So it depends. When it's a marriage relationship, of course, we always say, till death do us part. But unfortunately, it doesn't always work out that way.
Okay. And yes, you're right. It does depend on what kind of relationship we are talking about. And I think that today we can sort of focus on love relationships, marriages, that kind of thing. Are you okay with that?
Oh, yes. Well, I agree with that. In that case, then, I would say the ideal is for a marriage relationship to last for the life of the two people involved. A love relationship before marriage depends. The couple are sort of studying each other, and they may decide to go ahead and get married if they're compatible. If they're not, then they don't. Now, in marriage, the ideal is that they will stay together until death does them part. But we know that so many things happen in life that not all marriages survive.
Well, this is true. And the convention is to see this as very sad, as a very sad thing. And it can be a very sad thing. It's understandable why it's a very sad thing. The reason I'm doing the show, though, is because sometimes people, or a lot of times, people take it beyond sad and take it into a place where violence becomes involved. Folks become so enmeshed in the drama of the relationship that they lose their senses, if you will, and do some very unfortunate things. So I'd like to talk a little bit about that aspect of things. What do you say to people who are in that situation where the relationship is on the rocks? Let's say it's a marriage. The marriage is on the rocks, and you see them behaving in ways where I guess, you can understand they want to hang on to the relationship. They feel powerless. Behavior isn't helping. What do you say to people who are in that kind of situation?
I think the most fundamental thing is for someone to love themselves before they love somebody else, so that they are not completely dependent on being loved by somebody else. So if the relationship falls apart, if they still love themselves, then they don't need to hang on in a situation that is completely hopeless or toxic. So if the relationship is turning toxic, then people should be able to move on if they love themselves and have confidence in themselves.
Wonderful answer, Dad. I like that one. Mom, what do you have to say?
Well, everyone should feel important in life. If you feel important, then you will make a decision about a relationship depending on how do you feel about yourself. Are you confident enough to walk away? Are you confident enough to say, I need to protect myself? This situation is not good for me. And you just pick up and go.
So it does require, and it's both of you are saying, it does require first great relationship with yourself, first loving yourself. I've heard it said, and I've said it on the show too, that it takes two healthy people to have a healthy relationship. And so it is important to love yourself in order to have a relationship, but then it's also important to love yourself in order to understand when it is healthiest not to be in this relationship anymore. I'm curious about the signs. What signs do you see, or what signs should people look out for that indicate that, yeah, really, this isn't going to work out?
Well, somebody said youth is wasted on the young. We usually get married when we're still young. When we're older, we can look back now and say, it is so important to know the person very well that you get involved with before you get involved with them. However, if you got in and got involved with someone you begin to know who they are. And if you know who the person is, then you will know whether this relationship can last or whether it cannot last. So while you should know yourself, first know yourself very well, try to know that other person too. Then you'll know whether there's a possibility for change or not. After, you know, a period of time, you should be able to figure that out from the experiences that you've had with a person.
Now, it is important to know why you love that person, what's attracting you to that person, and are those the most important factors in your life. And so you base your decision to get involved based on why do you want to associate with that person?
Because very often the mistake is made by people that they want to marry this person because they're going to reform him. They say he's a good person. People just misunderstand him. He's just misunderstood, and I think I can change him. Well, the truth is that what you see is what you get. Most likely, he or she is not going to change. Very often people, too, project onto a person the qualities that they wish the person had. So it is very important for people to sort of look at a cold look at themselves and the person and the situation and determine whether they're going into it for the right reasons.
So you're suggesting or you're advocating for a certain level of objectivity when considering somebody for a relationship. And I'm going to apply that same advice that you're giving in terms of a breakup, but, you know, sort of looking at both situations. You're thinking about getting into a relationship, you're thinking about leaving a relationship, and you're asking for objectivity. It can be very difficult to be objective when one is in the relationship. So what about friends and family then? Are they an important resource, or can they be an important resource? I can imagine they could also steer people in various directions. What are your thoughts on involving friends and family when you're trying to make a decision about your relationship?
Yeah, that can be a little bit tricky because some people might have their own ulterior motives. Some may just not like your relationship because they don't like the person that you have a relationship with, but not for good reasons. However, we live in an imperfect world. You have to consult. I would rather first consult somebody who's a professional, maybe marriage counselor, before involving family, because if you involve family in a situation that could be healed, after the situation is healed, remember the family still remembers. So that could sort of bring in some negative feelings. Family members might still dislike your spouse for what you told them about him or her in the past. So I personally advocate going for professional counseling first before talking to family. What do you think?
Well, I say the buck stops with you. Even though you consult, you have to analyze for yourself and take definite decisions based on what you feel is good for you.
So ultimately, you could talk to other people, but you're going to have to decide for yourself. And that's great advice. It's a great thing to point out. I'm going to bring you back to a question that I asked just a little bit ago and see if we can get a little bit more detail in terms of your answer. And the question I asked is, when one is in a relationship, and things just aren't going well. And it's more than just everyday bickering. It's reaching a point where a person begins to be worried about, is this relationship toxic? Can I remain healthy in this relationship? Are there specific signs? I mean, I think that a lot of people, when they're in the relationships, you were talking about objectivity. It is a very subjective experience, and so they can second guess themselves, they can question themselves. Are there specific signs that people can look out for that can help indicate that, yes, really, I need to get out of this relationship?
That's a very difficult question. You know, we often speak about the battered wife syndrome.
Yes.
With all its intricacies and complications. A person who's inside a relationship, it may take a long time before they come to the point where they say, I definitely have to get out. And sometimes they wait for too long. I think I am right if I say that most women, for instance, are killed by their significant others rather than by a stranger. It is possible then for a person to remain in a situation for too long, hoping that magically something is going to change. And that's why I was suggesting seeking professional counsel early, because you'll find somebody who's completely objective, who's not related to any of the parties, and who can therefore, take an objective look to the situation. So I think it is important for both men and women, but I think it is especially important for women, because very often they suffer the worst consequences.
Well, Dad, you're absolutely right about that. I've been doing a little bit of research into the statistics, and it's true. The demographics, it depends on the age ranges and so forth, but that one of the highest causes of death for women in particular is that they are killed by intimate partners in situations where the relationship has soured, and especially when they're trying to leave the relationship, and that can be really scary. And we'll be doing a show in the future with somebody who deals specifically with people who are in abusive relationships, who need to get out of those relationships, and they'll talk about the steps that folks can take to be as safe as possible when they're leaving those relationships. But Dad, you have pointed out something that is really important. One of the things that you've said a couple of times, both of you, but Dad especially, is people don't change. And, you know, that can be a really tough one, because at least here in the United States, we're socialized. You know, we see movies where somebody starts out as an evil person or a negative person, and then through some set of experiences in the movie, they end the movie with some sort of salvation or an epiphany that changes their personalities and they become good people. And I mean, we can talk about, it's not just even the movies. I mean, if you think about A Christmas Carol, for example, about Scrooge, and how Scrooge winds up, you know, at the end of the movie transformed, or Beauty and the Beast, how the Beast at the end of the story winds up transformed. So girls especially, women especially, but, you know, generally speaking, we are socialized to believe that people can change, that they will transform. And often that is what leads people to have relationships or to enter into relationships with folks about whom they have reservations. They think that, well, you know, if I'm good enough, if I love them enough, they will change. And what I'm hearing from you is that just isn't true. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, we won't make the statement too general. We'll say generally speaking, some programs that I conducted that didn't have to do with relationships necessarily, like for instance, I conducted stop smoking programs. I found that a strong motivation for change was if somebody changes for religious reasons.
Okay.
There I've seen people who really turned around. But otherwise, I think we're told that you're born, one thing that you're born with is your personality. So your personality may not change. It is possible for you to change your behavior because of certain very strong external forces and so forth. But before entering a relationship, it is dangerous to enter the relationship with a hope that someone is going to change. And when you're already in a relationship and the relationship is toxic, it is good to start with the assumption that this probably isn't going to change. That's why I advocate professional opinion before you do anything else, because they can look at it, you know, objectively and give you some advice. But I have you lean towards the belief that this person is most likely not going to change.
Mom, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, yeah, I, in my experience, it is better to go into partnership with someone that has experienced change than to go into partnership with someone who you don't know, or
you hope
that they will change. So it is very important to know that people don't change for other people. They change because of a motivation that comes from inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm, now, that is really deep.
I can't overemphasize the importance of the premarital period. You know, when I was practicing pediatrics, one thing I always said to girls, was probably a little bit of an exaggeration, but I said to her, if he ever said to you that, you know, I might smack you or anything like that, run. Don't wait. Run. Because that comes from somewhere. And don't say that, oh, well, he just said it once and, you know, it doesn't mean that he means it or anything like that. You cannot take the risk. If he shows just a little bit of violence while you're still lovers, know that it is only going to escalate when you're now married, when the romance is over, the honeymoon is over. Yes, when reality hits. So the premarital period is extremely important. That is when people should open their eyes wide and assess this person before going into a relationship with him or her.
Well, you're getting into something that's really important. And, you know, you're a pediatrician. You also have a master's in public health. Mom, you're a nurse practitioner. So preventative medicine is something that is important to you. And I suppose in the realm of relationships, preventative measures are also really important. So let's talk a little bit about that. You mentioned, you know, that you would counsel the girls who were your patients regarding mentions of violence. You know, if he mentioned that he could be violent toward you, run. What other specific characteristics would you look out for as red flags?
Well, quite a few, depending on what area of life you're looking at. If a man is 30 years old and he still lives with his mother, then you might want to twice before entering the relationship. And if the man or the woman has had many broken relationships in the past, then you also want to watch out for that. Now, one thing that is seems to be pretty common, I'm now just, you know, I'm not giving out any statistics here, But I've seen so many difficulties in relationships where you find that one of the parties is actually bipolar. So they a time when you met them when they were just this very nice person, but then they can change and just be somebody else. So those are things to watch out for. Also, is the person, does he seem to be narcissistic? Is he into himself? Many other, you know, things that we could mention. But just beware. Look out for things that make you feel uncomfortable. If you feel uncomfortable, then there's probably something there. There's a Shangan proverb I learned from somebody who speaks Shangan. And the prophet said, if you think of a crocodile, jump out of the water.
Oh, boy. That's a good one.
So in a relationship, too, you have to be very suspicious while you are in that pre-marital state, because afterwards, it's very difficult to untangle the relationship.
Right. Right. And so you're talking about instincts in that sense, that it is important to listen to that little inner voice that we are often encouraged to suppress. Right. It's going to be okay. But that actually it's really important to listen to that inner voice.
Oh, definitely. No question.
Well, you bring up something else then that I think is important for folks to hear, which is that, you know, both you, Mom and Dad, you have said that it's important to really know someone before getting to marry them, to really, you know, check them out carefully. But then you also mentioned a situation where perhaps the person is bipolar or there are other intervening factors. Whereby, when you said that, I asked myself, can you really know someone? Is it really possible to know someone? I have concerns that a person who went into a relationship in good faith, thinking that they did all of the right things, might be in a situation where they're contemplating leaving a relationship and feel very guilty or feel really stupid because they made this choice. So is it really possible to really know someone and be able to predict in the future what's going to happen?
Not perfectly, but to a certain extent, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Talking and especially listening is very important. Very often couples get together to do things together, but take very little time in actually listening to one another. This person, what does he say about his childhood? What type of things did he do as a child? Which things was he proud of? Which things was he not proud of? All those experiences. So it is very important to listen very carefully, because very often history predicts the present. So if you hear what the person was doing before you met, it might tell you what he's going to do after you marry. So little things like those, but listening mm-hmm. is very, get the person to talk and listen.
I also think you need to know what are you looking for in
a
man.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
In a partner, what are your standards? And that will give you the presence of mind to see the red flags when they come along. If you are not prepared, you might just be going along and, you know, not doing your work. It's very important to know exactly what do you want in a partner, and then make sure that partner passes all your expectations.
And then it's important to be able to know what characteristics, you know, what specific things to look for that make one a good partner. And I'm wondering, I'm kind of putting you on the spot because we didn't talk about this before, but I wonder if off the top of your head, you might be able to recommend some resources that people can use to help put together that list of what they want. And, you know, I'm very much a proponent of encouraging people to think about what they do want. You know, a lot of times people spend a lot of time talking about what they don't want in a relationship. I don't want this kind of, you know, I don't want a short person. I don't want, you know, this, I don't want that. It often is very helpful to think in the positive, to think, I do want, this is what I do want out of a relationship. So are there resources that you can think of that you can recommend for folks to help to create that list of the things that that they do want, the characteristics that they do want in a relationship with someone?
Now, resource, do you mean some things like literature or things like those, or what are you referring to?
Well, books and so forth. Although, you know, as I've been talking, I think I've talked my way into the answer. You have said several times, go see a professional. You know, go see somebody who does premarital counseling that isn't a member of the family, that it's important to get that objective viewpoint and have somebody who can help you to see the things that you might not be able to see when you're in the relationship. That's what you're going to say, isn't it?
Yeah. And there are some resources there. If I'd known before, I'd looked them up. But one set of videos that I really, really enjoyed was by one Dr. D'Angelo. I've forgotten her first name.
Barbara.
What's her name?
I think it's Barbara.
That's correct, yes. I think that her lectures were just fantastic. They were just very good. So that is one source that I would I'd recommend. Well, others are talking to professional people then, like counselors, pastors, and things like those, your pediatrician.
Now, we've been married for 45 years, and I believe in asking people who've been there, what is it that makes them successful? And hopefully you might pick up some pointers, because they've already been there. They have the experience. And if you trust that they will give you an honest answer, it is a good thing to just go ahead and ask to interview them.
Well, since I have you here and I asked to interview you and you have been married for 45 years, what are a couple of things that you can mention that have significantly contributed to your success?
Well, number one, I think, where do you look for a spouse is number one. If you're a church-going person, you do not go to the bar to look for a spouse. If you are a person who likes the bar, you probably don't go to church to look for a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So you look for people who have a lot of common ground. Now, speaking about us, we've been married for 45 years, but we've known each other for many more years previous to that, because we went to the same school, which happened to be a parochial school. So our values were formed at the same place. And so we had a lot in common when we started this journey together, and those values are still what is keeping us going. So it is important then to find somebody who has a lot in common with you, especially as far as values are concerned.
Excellent advice. Excellent. Mom, do you have anything else to add to that?
Well, not much, but it is important to have a common ground that keeps the relationship together. If you don't have a common ground, then it's time to walk away.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, you are an example of a couple that has an especially aligned common ground. I mean, I think that you are very rare in terms of people who not only raised a family together, but are also medical professionals who ran a business together. And you are still running a business, if you will, a nonprofit together. So I want to talk to you about that in a little bit. We're going to take a little bit of a break, but I thank you so, so very much about the wonderful, wise words that you have offered regarding relationships and breakups and helping folks who are listening to think a little bit more about what to consider when entering a relationship and what to consider if you are contemplating the need to end a relationship. And we're talking specifically about intimate relationships in this case. But I'm very glad for that moment, that opportunity to segue into the next part of the show, which is to talk about this project that you have together, about this work that you're doing together. So if you would hang on for just a moment, I have a quick message to play for you, and then we'll get back to the show.
Okay.
You are listening to Untangled Resolution's presentation of The Breakup Whisperer, a show dedicated to promoting healthy breakup culture. Untangled Resolution's breakup coaching services can help you to figure out if you should break up, how to discuss breaking up, and how to nurture yourself after a breakup. Contact me, Batabile Mtombeni, The Breakup Whisperer, at welcome@123untangled.com. That's welcome@123untangled.com. Be sure to visit us on Facebook, like our page, and leave a note. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover? A guest you think would be great on the show? Please let us know. Facebook.com/123untangled. That's facebook.com/123untangled. And now, let's get back to the show. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for being with me today. It's a very special day here in the United States. It is Father's Day, and it also happens to be my mother's birthday. And so I have the distinct pleasure of having them both on the show today. We just spent the first part of the show talking about relationships, talking about what to look for when you're getting into a relationship, what to think about if you are contemplating ending a relationship. And we talked about preventative measures. While the show is about encouraging healthy breakup culture, it is nice to be able to not have to consider it. And so we heard some great words of wisdom about that as well. But I'm going to bring my parents back onto the show. And I'd love to talk with you about what you're doing now. We were talking about having aligned values, and in your case, how you are especially aligned in terms of your careers. You've spent a lot of your careers working together to almost 24/7. What did you do for the 17 years prior to retiring and starting the project that you have in South Africa?
Okay, that is more than 17 years. My wife and I ran a clinic, a pediatric clinic.
Well, how long was the clinic operating?
It's 18 or 19 years. Huh?
Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah. So, wait a bit. I think you're right, because I was counting the years when I was still working with a partner. Yeah, you're right, 17 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we started out with a pediatric clinic, which was extremely busy. But then we noticed that the mothers of our little patients also needed care. So we started a women's health clinic, and we hired women's health nurse practitioners to help us. But then your mom went to school and studied to be a nurse practitioner. And so then we ran the children's program, that is pediatrics. We ran the women's program, but then we were asked to add men also. So we started seeing men also when they came.
You know, I actually didn't know about that part. I think I was already back on the East Coast when you added that program. That's amazing. So you had this really comprehensive service that was available where basically you could see the whole family, right?
Oh, yes. We had 17 employees at the time.
Wow. Wow. But then eventually you retired. And I like to joke, you know, if we're out here where I live in the southern tier of New York, we have some, you know, pretty brutal winters. We had this winter, for example, a snowstorm that was so large it dumped 30 inches of snow. They had to call out the National Guard. They shut down the town and the surrounding area for 2 days. We were snowed in and couldn't go anywhere. And so, you know, people ask me about my family and where I'm from, and I tell them that I was raised in Southern California, and they can't believe that I'm here and that my family's in Southern California. And I say, but wait, listen, my parents also live in South Africa. They live in South Africa for part of the year, and they go to South Africa to escape the Southern California winter. And so they get a big laugh out of that, right? So what do you do when you're in South Africa escaping the Southern California winter?
Well, I wouldn't say escaping the Southern California beautiful winter weather, but we go to South Africa working with a program that is called the Mapimpana Children's Project, Operation Early Start. We work in a village, a very poor village, where there are many orphans because of HIV/AIDS, and very many poor children also. What really made us start the work in the village is after we'd been told by a volunteer social worker that many of the children in the village go to bed on one meal per day, a meal that they receive at school at around about 11 o'clock. So when we heard that, on a Thursday, we called the families together, and Monday, we started the program on a credit card. And that was almost 7 years ago, and the program is still going strong. We now are feeding 102 children. And then this year, we added the elderly because we found out the grandmas who are looking after these orphans and poor children also go hungry. So we started a program for the elderly. So we're now feeding the children and the elderly. And just before I left, our figures were exactly equal. We had, were feeding 102 children and 102 elderly.
That is amazing. So you're impacting, you're directly impacting 202 people. But of course, in the nature of community, it means that you're impacting quite a few more. Talk to me a bit about a typical day. How do you run the program day to day?
Well, the program has evolved somewhat. But typically, we'd get up in the morning, get ready for a breakfast, and then start cooking.
What time do you get up?
Say around about, it depends. We get up at different times, 5, 6 in the morning I get up. You get up what time, Mommy?
When I'm awake.
That's a little bit later. Yeah. But we have breakfast, and then we start cooking, and then we carry the food over to the village, and the children would come around about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and we'd start feeding then until close to sunset, and then drive back, and the following day start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But we have sort of grown to the point where we now have a staff of 3 young ladies, volunteers, who are helping us. We pay them a stipend, and two of them do the cooking, and all 3 of them help with the delivery of meals to the elderly. The children come to the center to be fed, but we deliver food to the elderly because many of them wouldn't be able to walk all the way to the center.
Now, I noticed that you said that the children were getting one meal a day at school at around 11. What happened with breakfast? Were you providing breakfast as well?
Well, there was a time when we tried to provide breakfast, but it proved to be impractical because they go to different schools. And
okay.
They leave for school from points that are very disparate. So that just fell through. We tried to sort of give them their breakfast after feeding them in the afternoon and give them the breakfast for the following day. Now, these are children, you know, from around about 2 years of age and up. And think of that child who's going to take that food home for breakfast tomorrow morning.
Yeah. I mean, there are tests that they do, don't they, to test a child's ability to delay gratification, and they usually fail miserably, right?
Yes. So that part of the program just didn't work out. So it is mostly then lunch that we provide. And since we're providing it late in the afternoon, we hope it carries them over for supper also. Now, the following day, at least, they'll be getting a meal at 11 o'clock at school.
Okay.
We also do help them with their assignments.
Mm-hmm. Especially math, English, and social studies.
So you have some tutoring services that you give to them, too.
That's right, yes.
Now, what about other practical matters? You know, you're cooking the food, but you have to buy the food. What happens with that? How do you procure your inventories, your supplies, and handle the administrative aspects of the program?
Yeah. Now, like we said, when we began, it was just us running back and forth with a credit card. But now, at least we have somebody who does our paperwork. We're still training her. And we now have...
One second, Dad. Mom, we can hear you whispering.
She was whispering that now we also have a few donors who are helping.
This is good, and we're going to get into that as well, Mom. I'm glad that you're bringing that up. But I wanted to warn you, you know, just in case, the mics are really good and they'll pick you up anyway. But so you have someone whom you're training to do the paperwork, and you have other folks who are coming on board. You mentioned you have three volunteers. What else is happening in terms of volunteers?
And one volunteer who's volunteering his own pickup truck to help deliver the food while we are here in the United States. And we have one very intelligent young man who is an accountant who is helping with the administration in general for the program.
Okay. So are you a registered charity? You know, if folks wanted to give donations, are they going to get a tax deduction? How does that work?
Oh, yes. Actually, we just got our last piece of paper from the South African version of the IRS so that people who are donating will get a tax deduction. Now, to get a tax deduction here in the United States, our donors usually give via a church. And the church is called the All Nations Church, and people send their donations there, and they get tax deductible receipts.
Okay. And I do want to mention there are a couple of resources now that you've mentioned. One was the video series by Dr. Barbara DeAngelis. And then also there is the source or the entity that allows for folks who are in the United States to donate to your program. And I'm putting together a blog. I have had a blog for this show. I'm relaunching the blog, and I will have all of that information on the blog for folks who are really interested in getting involved with this project and donating to the project. But I want to hear a little bit more about the people who are in the project, the children whom you are serving, and why you have been inspired to continue to grow this program over the last 7 years. 7 years gives you enough time to see a child who perhaps started out at the age of 12 now grow into adulthood, let's say. Tell me a little bit about some specific stories about children who have come through the program and how the program has served them.
Well, we have had some success, actually quite a bit of success, in keeping our children. Those that we met who were around about 12 years old are now towards the end of high school, and there's one that I'm extremely proud of because she's going to be taking nursing, and she seems to be doing pretty well. There's another one, I'm encouraging her to take medicine because she's good at math. Another one probably will be a social worker. So those kids that we had right in the beginning, we can see that we're going to have some success with them. It is not easy. It is not easy. It is a lot more difficult than we thought in the beginning, because in a village like the one that we work in, there are just no role models at all. No role models for family, like we know a family, a father and a mother and the children, and also no role model for education, that there are no professionals, for instance, who live in the village. So the children are not exposed to things that will create upward mobility. The girls simply think that they will grow up and reach a certain age and start having children. That is how the village gets populated. And the boys, they either will become a policeman, they say, or a soldier. So we're trying to expose them to other professions. I've had an engineer come in and talk to them. Well, actually, three engineers. It just so happened that the church that we're in sort of had quite a few engineers. So everybody wanted to be an engineer until the accountant came in, and now we have some who want to become accountants. So they're beginning to see a role model. We take them out of the village to the city just to expose them to people in the city, for them to see that there's another life, to see the type of houses people live in the city, you know, to create that desire to get an education and to do better, for them to see that an education can help you to actually do better in life. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing some of the results coming around. But like I say, it is a little bit difficult because the reality around them is so different to where we are directing them to. But,
so,
we're beginning to see success.
That is wonderful, and I'm sure that there are many who are listening who might be curious about learning more. And as I said, I'm going to put more information on my blog. But you've mentioned that folks can donate, and that you do have donors, and there are a couple of avenues for donations. What else can people do to help in the program? Is it possible for them to come to South Africa, for example, and see the program for themselves, participate in the day-to-day, and enjoy the, you know, the vicarious goodness that comes out of giving in that way?
Oh, actually, I was just waiting for an opportunity to tell you about the extremely exciting time that we had with a group of nurses who came from St. Benignus Medical Center in San Benito, California. 11 of them came over. They came so that they could work with the children, especially help us, and also work with the elderly. They came and spent 2 weeks with us. It was such fun that they're now already preparing for next year, March. They're coming back next year, March. So in addition to helping us with the work with the children and adults, we also took them out to tour the country a little bit. They went to the Kruger National Park. They went to the Sundwalan Caves. They went to God's Window. They went to Johannesburg. They went to the Cradle of Humankind, the Museum of Apartheid.
And visited Mandela's house.
They visited Mandela's house. I mean, they are so excited, and we are so excited. We would love for groups to come over because it is just so much fun. And we're able to house all of them.
And that's where I was going to go next, because, you know, flying to South Africa can be prohibitively expensive for some people. And then on top of that, lodging and food and so forth. So while they might be responsible for being able to get themselves to South Africa, what are you able to offer when people are there?
Well, the group that came offered to give a donation, and I said to them, okay, if you just give us $30 a day, that would be fine. We'll give you bed and breakfast. And after they came, saw the place, ate their food, they upped it themselves to $45 a day, which is still very inexpensive.
Well,
now,
amazing.
Another thing that they really liked were the restaurants, and because of the exchange rate, things were so cheap they could not believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it organized so that one of them would be in charge of all the expenses, and she came and told me, you know what, I'm beginning to give the girls back some of their money because it is a lot cheaper than we ever imagined. So when we took them out, for instance, when they first arrived, we took them out for dinner, and for 13 of us, that is 11 of them and two of us, I mean, we ate a full dinner, everything, drinks and that's soft drinks, and and dessert and whatnot. And you know how much we paid?
How much?
The equivalent of about $140.
For 13 people?
13 people. Full meal. Full meal.
That
From that point,
extraordinary.
They decided to do restaurant hopping.
Okay. And South Africa has really great restaurants. You know, that's the other thing that folks should understand is that while you can have an extraordinary experience on safari and go out and see the more rural aspect of South Africa, we also have marvelous restaurants, great cities. It's a wonderful vacation spot as well. And so you can get the best of both worlds there. So I encourage folks to reach out. What is the best way to reach you?
Okay. While we're here in the United States, by telephone, they can reach us on area code 909-796-6086 or on mobile phone at 909-462-2325 or 909-462-2318.
Okay.
And I hope you'll have my email on there too, which is mtombenim@aol.com.
Okay. So I'll be sure to add the information for contacting you on the blog, and then I'll also give information about how you might be reached by Facebook, email, and in other ways. I want to thank you so, so very much for coming on the show today. We have about 60 seconds left. Any last words in the last 30 seconds? Give me a little bit of a minute or a moment to wrap up the show.
Well, I just like to say service is fun. If you want to have real fun, a real good holiday, take a holiday where you're also going to serve. And our nurses who came are witness to that. And we're witnesses to that too, because we really enjoyed their stay. It was just wonderful. So if you'd like to take a vacation where you're going to do something practical, something that's going to uplift other people, come to us, and we'd be very happy to have you.
That's wonderful. Mom, last words?
I do encourage you to follow through with our invitation. You won't be sorry.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yes, nice, short, to the point. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening. I hope that you join us again for our next show. This has been our Father's Day special, also celebrating my mom's birthday. Have a good day.
Thank you so much, and thank you.